So welcome, good people. Trespassing Allowed, where boundaries are meant to be crossed, stories meant to be shared, and laughter is still the best way to navigate life's unexpected detours. John M. Schrader here, and June 14th, the sabbatical is over. Now it's time to play. You know, I was thinking the other day, people always say, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, what will you be when you grow up? And we still ask ourselves these questions even in our 40s, 50s, and 60s, because will we ever truly grow up? And when we hit that point, what will happen? Well, I decided, I think that when I grow up, I want to be a kid. Yeah, I think I want to be a kid again. You know, being a kid back in the 70s and 80s, man, it was just awesome. A lot of fun. Did whatever I wanted. And so I thought to myself as I was walking around the lake, yep, I think I'll be a kid again. However, I asked my wife what she thought, and she said, no, you can't be a kid because being a kid means that we can't be married anymore. And I'm like, oh, okay. Please expand. So she says, you know, the problem with being a kid is all you do is you go out and you play all day, you come inside, you eat, you play some more, and then you watch TV. And, you know, I'm not sure I can go along with that. Well, she is right about one thing. I do like playing a lot. It seems like most nights I do like to watch a little TV. Believe it or not, I watch about an hour of Fox and I watch about an hour of CNN. That way I get two different perspectives sometime of where we are in the world. But let's get back to, should I be a kid? Should I be a grown-up? Can I be both? I don't know. But today, think a little bit about, what would your definition of being a kid be all about? And wouldn't it be fun to be a kid again? One thing I did as a kid, at a very early age, I think it was second grade, my brother Jim, who was 8 years older than me, that you'll always hear me refer to him as he was my Superman. I followed him through his football career, his wrestling career. I decided to start the sport of wrestling in the second grade. We're going to talk a lot about wrestling. It was definitely the sport that I probably enjoyed the most. I had some success in it. So one of the things I loved about wrestling, it taught me a lot of life lessons. Even though it may have been six of the hardest minutes of my life with the matches that I wrestled, it was the preparation that I think helped me become more the person I wanted to be. With wrestling, you had to have technique. There needed to be balance. Speed was important. How do you set your opponent up? How much confidence do you need to be a good wrestler? Respect for your opponent, how important that was. Never overlook any opponent. You know, wrestling to me was one of those sports that at a very early age, partly because I wasn't really big or tall, it was a sport that I could compete in where I learned very quickly that it was me. I was the one wrestling. I was the one responsible for the results. I was the one that had to go out there and was I in good enough shape? Was I not in good enough shape? How did I handle my defeats? And more importantly, how did I handle my victories? I really felt like wrestling was one of those sports that as I decided to go into my own business right out of college, I could look back at wrestling and through the 12 or 14 years, the teams that I wrestled with really helped me determine that I really felt confident that I think I could do my own gig. The thing about wrestlers, you will hear people say wrestlers can be the most cocky people in the world. And there's a lot of truth to that. Others will say they're just super confident. We'll talk a little later about the psychology of a wrestler and something that just was so evident in why wrestlers, especially those that did well, Why were they so confident? What built them up to be that person they became? I know a number of business owners who used to be wrestlers. They're independent thinkers. They are people that are not afraid to go out and try something. They're not afraid to take the chances. And so as my career progressed and as I enjoyed watching myself finally grow up from a 45-pounder to a 95-pounder as an eighth grader and 145 as a junior and then 155 my senior year, I really respected the wrestling theme in that I could blame no one in my defeat. I played a lot of other team sports, played football, played a little baseball. And one of the things in those team sports is you definitely had to rely on your other teammates. If you were a linebacker, if you were a tight end, if you were any position in football, you really had to depend on your other 10 players around you to be successful. Wrestling was different. Yes, you wrestled as a team, but when you went out on a mat and you shook the hand of your opponent and then the whistle was blown, it was you against your opponent and everyone in the stadium's eyes were just on you. And in one respect, wrestling for a lot of people was just too stressful. A lot of people who have wrestled in their lives started out and maybe enjoyed it, but it was one of those sports that pressure was on you during that match. And win, lose, or draw, and there weren't many draws, you blame no one but yourself if you lost. If you were too close and you thought the referee made a bad call at the end, that wasn't the referee's fault. You should have been far ahead of the opponent anyway. But I really feel like wrestling was the sport that gave me the confidence to be able to go out on my own as a businessman, because that business that I started, which was landscaping and maintenance, that business allowed me to think back to my days as a wrestler and say, if it's going to be successful, it's going to be up to me. If it fails, it will be my fault. And so to me, wrestling was just an amazing sport and still is today. And I was very grateful to be able to wrestle for Modern Day High School, a team that I've said in the past, if you ever get a chance to read the book, We Are MD, it's a tradition that many people really, really enjoy. I think one of my funniest moments in wrestling is that for a lot of people, the actual match was actually sometimes secondary to what you had to do to get to that point. Wrestling was one of those sports in grade school where you had to be in a weight class. And for many people, deciding what weight you wanted to wrestle, how much weight did you want to lose? There was this mentality, this psychology that says if I lost the right amount of weight, I would be a better wrestler than if I was heavier or lighter. The other option issues were you maybe wanted to make the varsity squad, and the weight that you were in, you may have been wrestling one of the best kids on the team who may have been one of the best kids in the state. And so you had to make a decision. Do I want to drop a few pounds and go to a lower weight? Back in the 70s and back in the 80s, they didn't have the guidelines that they knew now about how much weight you can or can't lose. So it was not uncommon for a person to lose 12, 15, sometimes even more to hit the weight they wanted to. One of my fondest memories, my senior year in high school, we had a gentleman that he was a very good wrestler, but yet he wanted to wrestle at his prescribed weight. And it was decided one night before Thanksgiving that we had a match in about 4 days. And never forget, we'll just call him Joey at this point. Our coach told us, boys, you know, every time we have this Thanksgiving thing, which comes once a year, it seems like some of you guys go out and you just eat too much. do me a favor. Go home. Don't eat much. I'm weighing you in now. I'm going to weigh you in the morning. And if everyone can stay within a certain amount or a certain percentage of their weight, I'm going to have an easier practice. If anybody does anything stupid, we're going to run a lot of laps. That was our practice. We started out running 25 laps with stairs, 2 hours of practice. You'd lose anywhere from maybe 6, 8, 9 pounds sometimes. So the next morning, we all get together and we all try to eat as little as we could. But let's be honest, it's Thanksgiving. And as a wrestler, you had to take those opportunities when you could to splurge a little bit. But Joey, as he came into the weight room that morning, we could see on his face that he wasn't happy. There was something going on. He just didn't look like he was in a very good mood. At weigh-in time, we knew why. As Joey stepped on the scale, and we were all kind of watching to see what Joey's thinking was, we saw the coach, if you ever seen those scales where back in the good old days, you move the metal over and you would push the upper metal weight to find out exactly what you weighed. Sure enough, as the coach was pushing the metal forward, he kept going and going and going. And you know you're finally at your weight when the metal spigot finally drops a little bit. 16 pounds later, Joey's spigot, which I'm sure that's not the right term, but 16 pounds later, Joey finally dropped. In less than 12 hours, Joey had gained 16 pounds. And our coach was furious. We were amazed. So we had to listen and ask the question, Joey, how in the world did you gain 16 pounds in less than 12 hours? And it was a simple answer. Well, guys, honestly, he said, we have a big family and a bunch of people came over and a whole lot of the moms brought pies. And I didn't eat a whole lot of turkey and I didn't eat much dressing, but gosh, I just couldn't stop eating the pie. I thought I could stop at 2 pieces and then 3 pieces. And then I just couldn't quit. So here we are, 16 pounds later. Yeah, we ran 25 laps plus another 15 laps, but I'll never forget Joey. You know, he was already very thin, but it looked like he had a little 16-pound baby growing in his belly. I don't know. Maybe that's something that I noticed and no one else did. But that was the thing about wrestling. Sometimes your greatest match was not the 6 minutes on that particular night. Sometimes your greatest match was getting to the weight that you really and truly had to be at. I can't tell you how many weigh-ins that a few ounces here or a few ounces there determined whether or not you were going to be wrestling that night or not. So that being said, wrestling is a sport that you'll hear us bring up time and time again. In modern-day high school, how good are those Wildcats? In a 9-year period, one time, I believe is in the 80s or 90s, they won 9 state championships 9 years in a row. A school of 500 that were competing against schools with 4,000 and 5,000. An amazing tradition, a great sport that I truly love to still watch today. There is nothing better than an awesome competitive wrestling match between 2 state champions, state national champions. It's just, it may seem like a 6 or 8 minute deal, but there's a lot going into it. So let's pass wrestling for a little bit. What do you do when you're stressed? When you're frustrated, you're mad, things aren't going your way. What can you do for a very short period of time that may get you through a stressful moment? You know, a lot of people will say, take some deep breaths, relax, depending on where you are, if you're at work. You may not have a whole lot of options of where you want to go or what you want to do. One of the things that I've noticed has become very popular in the last 10 to 15 years. Have you noticed in bars and certain functions, special events, have you noticed this thing called axe throwing? Yeah, where people are actually taking 3-4 axes and they're throwing them at targets. And it's funny that, you know, years ago, yeah, you saw it on the old Westerns. You saw it occasionally on maybe Wide World of Sports every 20 years. But axe throwing has somehow become popular in many communities. And so as an old Boy Scout, as I talked about last time, we used to work with axes all the time, axes, hatchets, whatever. So the short handle, what I call the axe, has become for a lot of people an entertaining value, a thing to do that's a little bit different than cornhole. Yeah, it's a little bit different than washers or horseshoes. So why in my world is axe throwing a nice stress reliever? It's one of the things I do most every day as I do my little workout around my property. But there's a couple things about axe throwing that are very important. Number one, there is a sweet spot in axe throwing. If you ever notice, you're always about 10, 11, 12 feet away from what you're throwing at. The beautiful thing about axe throwing is it's a great stress reliever that all you need is about 3 or 4 axes, get you a big slab of wood, and find a safe spot. I think for a lot of you, unless you're maybe in an apartment or something where you have your own yard, I'm going to say, hey, go out and give it a shot. Now, again, I am not your liability attorney. I'm not your doctor. I am definitely not your wife. And you may find out your wife might like this more than you do. But axe throwing is a very quick and easy way that if I'm a little stressed or if I just want a nice little workout, I'll go over to an area that I set up years ago. I've got probably 10 or 12 slabs of pine that are up there. And I've got 6 or 8 axes. And you'll be amazed after you throw for about 5 minutes, you kind of have a good feeling, especially if you hit all 12 axes. It's a sport that, for whatever reason, I think for some people, they're a little fearful that is it dangerous? Is it something that you really want to be doing in your backyard? Certainly, if you have kids, there's a whole other topic and conversation of where you work with there. But we have had a number of events up here where we've had the axe throwing, and it's just a great way to release some stress, have some fun. And once you get used to it, that 11 feet, that one rotation, you'll be surprised how accurate you can become. But with every story, I try to have at least one funny part or one memorable part about axe throwing. And on this particular area, I definitely have to go to an incident that happened actually last year in 2023. Like I said, I enjoy people. I enjoy large groups of people. So we will have different functions up here, whether it's a fundraiser or we'll bring up different groups that just kind of like to hang out. We hit some golf balls. We do some fishing, a lot of BSing, you know, sitting around and enjoying a good meal and maybe a few beverages. But the particular time I'm thinking about goes something like this. I had a large bunch of my fraternity friends up a few months earlier, and the University of Southern Indiana was the school I went to, and the fraternity Sigma Tau Gamma, we had a bunch of those individuals up here. And it just so happened that the coach of USI's basketball team, great man, Mr. Gerard Stan, his first name, came up that day. And after he looked around and spent some time with us, he asked if he could bring the basketball team up that summer. I was elated. Sure, you know, bring them up. He said, you know, we practice in the summer and I'm looking for things that they can just kind of come out, relax, have a good time and get their mind off of basketball a little bit. So I said, yeah, no question. We would love to have him here. I felt honored to have my old alma mater's basketball team. We actually did have a gentleman by the name of John Holland in our fraternity, 7'6" and a half, believe it or not, that played for USI. So I felt thrilled that they would want to come up. So the night before they were here, I kind of walked through the property and kind of dressed it up a little here and a little there. I actually went over to where we would be throwing the axes and was throwing some axes that making sure I had enough and having the 11-foot sweet spot all lined out. And that day, sure enough, about 20 to 25 of the players came, five of the coaches. And guys, have some fun. Please sign a waiver. That's not me. That's my attorney, because we do have a lot of things on this property that may be a little dangerous. But sign the waiver. Have some fun. Some of the guys went fishing. Some of the guys were hitting golf balls off the deck. Some of the guys were heading over to the axe throwing. So I'm walking around and talking with the coach and really kind of enjoying the day and enjoying the people. I'm down by the fishing group, and they're catching some channel cat and a few other things, and we're laughing and enjoying ourselves. And then I look over at the axe throwing area, and there was probably about 6 or 8 of the basketball players there. All of them were taller than me. That's why I was a wrestler and not a basketball player. But as I'm watching, I'm starting to walk over to the area because they're laughing and giggling and they're throwing some axes like good basketball players do. But as I'm walking there, I suddenly see something that makes me stop for a moment. I see one of the basketball players raising his right leg and starting to like skip on his left leg. And he's trying to hold his foot, which from my distance did not look good. This was the axe throwing area. I've never had an issue with the axe throwing area, but from about 100 to 200 feet away, it did not look good with this basketball player suddenly holding his foot, his right foot. The other thing I kind of noticed, though, was that the other basketball players, they didn't stop. They didn't care. They just kept throwing, and I'm thinking, okay, if in fact an axe has met the wrong target, if in fact he's actually hit his foot with the axe, it did seem a little surprising that his fellow basketball players, his teammates, really didn't care too much about his sore foot. So as I'm walking towards him now at a little bit more of a faster pace, I'm wondering, okay, this isn't good. John Schrader has USI basketball team over, cuts the foot with his axe throwing, news at 11, right? But luckily, as I got to him and I saw no blood, it became very quickly announced that he had been stung by a ground hornet. And sure enough, there, right where the main line was, there was a group of ground hornets that had come out of the ground. And sure enough, this gentleman had met one of them, and it wasn't a pretty sight. He already had his sock off, his shoe off. He had already some swelling occurring. But I can tell you right now, that swelling looked a whole lot better to me than a 6-inch cut with an axe. Because of the ground hornets now they're really pissed off and they're starting to fly around. We actually had to close it down so no one else got stung. And we were able to get him to the house, and we were able to get him the medication that he needed for the sting. I bring up this story because one of the things that I decided a long, long time ago was how I would face fears, how I would face potential problems, and realizing I had a place that we have a lot of fun with, but we also do a lot of adventurous things. Fear is something we'll talk about in the near future. But on this particular day, yep, one ground hornet took my mind into a very dark place for a very short period of time. So just make sure that if you ever set up your own axe throwing area, there's a lot of video on YouTube on showing you how to set these things up. Just do one thing. Try not to set it up over a ground hornet nest because it can cause a lot of pain. With that being said, when did I decide to become a landscaper? A landscaper for me was that balance between my passion of wanting to be outside and that ability to stay active physically. It was also for me a business that as I was coming out of college, that I actually had enough money that I could start this business. I could plant this seed on a very, very small budget and then let it grow. And it also allowed me to become the entrepreneur that maybe I had kind of been preparing for most of my life. Planting seeds. We all get to do it. We all have an opportunity from a very young age to start planting seeds for our future. You heard me say earlier, in my world, your first 30 years, you're planting seeds. Your first 30 years, you're starting to create for yourself what your future is going to be. As a landscaper, it was kind of interesting. First, a mowing company, and then once I transitioned into landscaping, planting seeds quite literally was exactly what I did. I was the newest form of landscaper in the Evansville area. Evansville had four large landscape companies that had been around for generations, 30, 40, 50 years. So I realized what I wanted to become, I was going to have to do it gradually. I was not going to be able to go out and start doing $250,000 landscapes. That would not have been a smart move. So one of the things you realized as a landscaper was that the one job you could get that most landscapers didn't want to do was putting in lawns. Putting in lawns was basically going out with a tractor, gilling the lawn, and then setting down about 10 pounds of grass seed per 1,000 square feet. So putting in a lawn was basically going out with a tractor and a gill, leveling the yard, preparing the seed bed. Back then, it was about 10 pounds per 1,000 square feet. Throw down the fertilizer, put down the straw, put out the water, and maybe in 3 or 4 weeks, you could see what kind of lawn you could have. Amazingly about lawns, first of all, no matter how much you told the people to be patient that this lawn was really going to take a couple years to be the perfect, beautiful lawn that they see their neighbor have across the street, planting seeds was part of my growing process. And it was amazing that sometimes I could do two lawns in the same subdivision, two exact types of dirt, same fertilizer, same seed, same amount. And 5 weeks later, you'd come back and one lawn would look very, very happy and the other lawn looked like it was really struggling. Could never figure out exactly why that was. Wrote a lot of papers on what you need to do for your lawn for the next couple years. But planting a seed as a landscaper is a lot of why I'm here today. A lot of why this podcast will talk about a long journey that's gotten us here. But can you plan 30 years ahead? Can you really see what 30 years from where you are right now may look like? Believe it or not, I think you can. You can plant seeds 30 years ago, and then 30 years later, yeah, you can see exactly where you're at. Imagine doing nearly 4,500 landscape jobs, projects of all different shapes and sizes. And planning your life that if all goes well, maybe in your last 30 years, you just work on one final big landscape. And that's kind of where I'm at today. Yeah, believe it or not, there were ideas and things I decided I wanted to do and where I wanted to be when I got to semi-retirement. And very patiently, with confidence and with respect, that's kind of where I'm at today. You know, a lot of people will say, John, you cannot predict what your life will be like. And there's some truth to that. You may not be able to predict where you'll be in 5 years or 10 years or 30 years or 50 years, right? We can't do that because everyone says it's really not up to us. It's up to God, or it's up to the country. It's up to the politicians. But let me tell you this. You may not predict where you'll be in 20 or 30 years, but by God, I promise you this, you can definitely plan it. You can put a plan together, and you can look so far ahead that, yes, indeed, you can plan your future. And that's what a lot of this podcast is going to be about, teaching you how you can plan your future. Two things I really loved. Of all the landscaping I did in 30 years, there were two passions. One was aquatics, one water gardens, one was synthetic turf. And a lot of what you're going to hear about and a lot of what I am putting together now deals with synthetic turf. The synthetic turf was something I started playing with 22 years ago, a product that I really and truly did not think it was going to produce what it has produced. Synthetic turf 22 years ago has given me the patience to put together my next big plan. Because if turf can look this good 22 years later, doing the things I've done with it, then yeah, I'm ready to go to that next big level. That will be very rare to a lot of you. As a landscaper, what I loved about it was it allowed me to be a lot of things. I did not have to be just the guy out there planting the tree, planting the yard, building the deck, building the patio, working with the koi, putting in the water garden. One of the things I have enjoyed a lot about my life, and I learned long ago, I like doing a lot of different things. I'm not one of these people that I think could have been necessarily an attorney and spent my entire life just being an attorney. The beautiful part about landscaping was there's so many different areas of landscaping that allowed my personality, my wants and needs of doing something different nearly every day, it happened. Other things through time, what did I get to do? I got to become a flight instructor. I got to become a trebuchet safety director. I got to become a father who could never stop laughing at some of the things that happened. And the list goes on and on. Speaking of fathers, let's talk about one of my favorite, most funny, most exciting moments with my oldest son, Quinn. One of the nice things about being a landscaper and having my own company was that at an early age, my sons were able to come down and do a few things around the shop. They could help here, they could help there. But Quinn, my oldest son, I'll never forget, gave me one of the funniest moments that I have ever seen. And to this day, it still just brings laughter to my heart. You see, Quinn wanted to come down one day. And Dad, I want to come to work with you. And he was probably about 5 or 6. And he wanted to go around with me. He wanted to go around with me with one of my customers. By this time in our landscaping field, we were very big into the aquatics, and whether you wanted a bubbler or an open water pond concept, we had about 6 or 7 ponds around our place, different sizes, different shapes. Because I always felt like if I could show you 5 or 6 different ponds, the one you would pick, we could recreate very easily. So I told Quinn this. I said, Quinn, I said, yep, you can come with me today, but you're going to have to be quiet you're going to have to just walk around with this because as I talk to the couple, they're going to have a lot of questions. But hey, yeah, come on with Dad. Let's have some fun. So as we're going around the ponds with Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I'm pretty sure that's not their names, but we're going to use that for now. As we're going around the ponds with Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I gave Quinn a bag of fish food so that at each pond, Quinn could throw a little fish food into the pond and the koi or the goldfish would come up and they would eat. So as we're walking around and the four of us and I'm trying to ask the right questions to get the Smiths to tell me what they're really truly looking for, we begin to talk about budget. We talk about the type of yard they have and so on and so forth. I suddenly see Mrs. Smith look right at my son Quinn with the funniest look on her face. It was kind of a smirk. It was kind of a smile, but it was certainly Quinn had just done something that caught her attention. So I now look at Quinn also, and there he is chewing on something. He's chewing on the only thing that was possible. So, hi, Quinn. Quinn, what are you eating? I asked. And Quinn says without missing a beat, I'm eating some of this fish food, Dad. I was pretty sure that's what was happening, but I was very surprised at how calm he was to let me know that he had decided in front of our customers to eat some of the fish food. So without trying to be startled or trying to be surprised or being just a good old dad, I asked him a question that I felt I wasn't prepared for an answer, but I was just curious to see what my independent, strong son would say. So tell me, Quinn, what does that fish food taste like? And he stopped for a moment and he tasted it a little bit longer and he said, Dad, it tastes a lot like the cat food I ate yesterday at home. Yeah, the Smiths were dying laughing. Quinn was just kind of like, you asked me the question, I told you the answer, and I am trying to compose myself as I am dying laughing at now the Smiths realize that the Schraders, we now know what their diet is. They feed their kids fish food and cat food occasionally. And who should we talk to now that we feel like I don't know, maybe we call the Child Protective Services or something to see if the Schraders ever feed their kids normal food. Those are the kind of memories as a father, and maybe it's because Sunday's Father's Day. Maybe that is one of the great reasons why having some sons, having some children, keep you young at heart. You never know what is going to come out of their mouths. My sister, Janie, who taught kindergarten, would tell us all these amazing stories about what these kids would say. The thing about a child is they have no governor. They are just basically going to tell you exactly what they want to tell you. But that moment where he explained to me that, yes, the fish food and the cat food were very similar, was one of those moments where I said, yeah, having children, one of the greatest gifts of God, one of the greatest and happiest things you can ever do. So part of being a landscaper, being able to be a father, being able to always have children around and kids around and later grandkids around, was just something that I always have said was a wonderful part of fatherhood. So I think with that being said, we will move forward. Before we do, let me just answer one of the questions some people have asked me. John, trespassing allowed. What is that about? Why allowed? A-L-O-U-D. why is that such a significant part of your life? And why is that such a significant part of the title of your podcast? Are you seriously saying trespassing aloud? That are there signs in the stores that say trespassing aloud? We never see it. It's always no trespassing, right? No trespassing, no trespassing. But yeah, I have to admit, I have gone into some stores sometime and I have asked the people, where are your signs that say trespassing aloud? And it's kind of funny. If you get the manager, he looks at you really interestingly like, sir, can I help you with anything else? And then eventually he calls security. If you get maybe a new person who's really excited to try to help you, they'll actually look in the signs and look for a trespassing aloud sign, which I've yet to find a single store that ever has it. Being aloud means noise, right? Usually if things are loud, there's some kind of noise going on. And one of the things I realized that as a landscaper, as a maintenance company, when things were loud, I was making money. When the blowers were going, when the lawnmowers were running, when the skid steers were revving up, when the tractors were pulling the bush hog, loud to me in most of my life meant that, okay, we're being productive, we're making something, we're building something, we're creating something. So loud was also just kind of a neat way of saying, if it's loud, yeah, we're probably making money. If it wasn't loud, if something was broke, if the machine was broke down, darn, not only weren't we making money, we may have been losing money. Loud is laughter. You ever been to a place anywhere and there's a bunch of laughter going on? I like that. The louder the laughter, the better it is. The happier I am, the happier they are. I do wish we could be a country where we laugh a lot more than what we do. Loud things get people's attention, right? Someone's singing, you're at the ball game, the crowd is going crazy. Your team has scored and the roar is so loud that you just can't stand it. People are hugging each other. How about that darling baby crying in church? Or he's just crying at the store. How does that make you feel? Do you feel bad for the child? Is the child crying because he's hungry, because he's mad? Is she crying because she's ready to get out of the store and go somewhere else? A darling baby crying to me because of my background with my parents was a sound I really enjoy. What about the sound you hear after the crack of lightning? You've seen the bolt of lightning and you start to count, and then here comes the thunder. The roaring river that you're rafting down and the people are really enjoying. So, trespassing aloud has a lot of nuances, and I'll talk about them through our podcast. But a lot of people don't like loud noises, maybe for the wrong reasons, maybe for the right reasons. But when my producer came to me after I told her everything that we were going to put into this podcast, she came, Emily, thank yous, with podcasting, trespassing aloud. And I thought, man, that's perfect. So with that being said, we will end today. Once again, please understand, I love this country. I love my God. I love my family. And yeah, I just love people. But once again, it's not always in that order. And sometimes we struggle. And sometimes we just have to say, hey, let's give this some time and it will get better. So hope you had a good day today. By the time you hear it, Father's Day will be over, but I am looking forward to Father's Day. I've asked my wife a number of times what she's getting me for Father's Day, and she keeps giving me this list of 9 or 10 things I need to do around the house. So with that being said, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate the time that you guys spend to listen to this. And hopefully pass this on. The more I talk, hopefully the more fun we'll have. But I wish you all well and have a great day.